Welcome into the Odds and Audibles podcast. I'm Matt Pramer, Scopel Jared back on the show. Welcome to your Friday edition of the show. Don't know where you are listening, but where we are, it's cold. I think winter has finally arrived in Eugene, but nonetheless, on the recruiting trail, it's burning up. Oregon's coaching staff has their last weekend here where they can have players on campus before National Signing Day. Also, unofficial visitors are going to be here, and we're going to talk about it. There's a lot to break down. It's a really impressive list of guys that are going to be here on campus, some commits, some five stars, some official visits, some unofficial visits. They've got it all. We should note, we'll also talk about just kind of how we feel like this recruiting class is going to finish going into 2022's February signing period. Who is here, first of all? The verbal commitments, the signees. It looks like every single verbal commitment and signee on Oregon's 2022 recruiting class outside of Michael Wooten and Kawika Rogers. I know for certain Rogers is not here. I haven't been able to confirm he's here or not here for Michael Wooten, but everybody else is here for an official visit. And how they were able to do this is there's an NCAA policy that if there's a coaching change and you've taken an official visit to that school, you're allowed a revisit with the new coaching staff. And so Jaleel Tucker, Devin Jackson, Harrison Taggart, Ben Roberts, Anthony Jones, Sir Mills, Trajan Williams, Justice Slow, all these guys have taken official visits, and they're going to take now a second one to get to Eugene and meet up with Dan Lanning's staff. And I think that in of itself is a pretty big deal. And it's also setting you up for the guys who aren't committed to maybe have some extra ears and extra eyes and other guys just, you know, helping you self-recruit.
It reminds me a little of how under the previous staff, and I wonder if Dan Lanning's staff will do something similar, how the final home game was always kind of this sort of thing where you would have a large contingent of your commitments come on campus, but also some of your top targets because signing day was coming up and you wanted to kind of have that last opportunity to make an impression. And I think this is more significant than any other in terms of having, I know you talk about junior days. This is kind of your almost senior day, kind of an unusual way to do it, but this staff needs to meet with these players face to face and get everybody in the same room. I mean, previous, like we talk about Mario Cristobal and that staff, that was a big component of what they were doing in terms of kind of establishing connections. Cause it wasn't just coach to player. It was also, you know, recruit to recruit. And I think it's important to establish those. A lot of these, some of these players haven't been committed very long and probably don't have, you know, very strong standing relationships with the other, you know, previous signees or other verbal commitments. So makes a lot of sense to do this. Makes a lot of sense, as you said, Matt, and we'll get to some of the names that are 2022 who could join this class, who will also be here. But, you know, for those players that are undecided to maybe see the committed players, you know, together and kind of see maybe some of that, those relationships, that can only help too. So makes a lot of sense. Oregon has, as Matt will get to in a moment, some big 2022s that are still undecided here. Some players that were previously committed, some new targets. You just hope that this is a weekend where the vision that Lanning is putting, you know, into place comes together and that the cohesiveness with this staff and all of that just starts to kind of come together and you can kind of see the long-term vision. Because I'm sure that's what some of these, you know, these committed and signed players even are wanting, you know, kind of wondering about is, you know, hey, we kind of, the players who signed on good faith, basically, right? I mean, they had almost no idea who their position coaches were going to be. Lanning was announced like 4 days, 5 days, whatever it was before signing day. I mean, this all came together really quickly. So to get them all in the same place together to kind of communicate a message and a vision, I think makes a ton of sense. So excited to kind of hear when this all comes together, maybe early next week, maybe after signing period, kind of some of the stuff that was said, kind of how this came together and what the, I guess what the fallout is from it.
The ability to have a second official visit is one of the few things the NCAA has ever gotten right. It's going to play, such a pivotal role in Oregon's recruiting class for 2022. You know, just like Eric outlined, a lot of these guys, especially the signees and the early signing day, really just took a chance on what the Oregon staff was going to be. It still wasn't completely full, but ever since it has been, and ever since Oregon has been allowed, they've been hitting the recruiting trails hard and trying to get these face-to-face personal interactions with their commits, with their signees, just to give them an idea of what is actually to come. But obviously it's a massive recruiting weekend for Oregon. Last recruiting weekend of the cycle. I don't think it's clearly not a coincidence that they are bringing in some really high end top 23 talent with people who are committed and people who have recently committed, like Justice Lowe, to the point where, you know, they could talk about what they see in the staff and what this opportunity they think provides to them and what it could provide to 2023 players, 2024 players, whatever the case may be. I think it's a perfect blend of established, you know, high school senior talent to up and coming, also pretty established players at points. But to give the younger guys kind of some perspective on what this staff is doing, and give them all just a general perspective overall from this new staff and where they come from and finally meeting face to face and all of that. I think it's going to be a hit. It just kind of feels like one of those things where it's going to be a hit. This is back-to-back massive recruiting weekends with a lot of talent coming in. So for Oregon staff to put these together on just honestly relatively short notice is impressive. So I think it's going to be something that Oregon is just going to, you know, keep going from here on out. I'll be interested to see if Oregon in like the summer and the spring has a similar event to what Saturday Night Live was. Yeah. Under the old staff, I'd imagine that they do something like that, just because I don't know, with the way that they've been able to get kids to at least visit on unofficials or officials, whatever the case may be, I don't know how they couldn't have an event like that with just a ton of talent and a ton of, you know, sophomores and juniors in high school.
Yeah, I imagine Saturday Night Live will remain in some form, maybe under a different name, maybe a different date, yeah. But I think we're all in agreement. It would be crazy if they did away with that.
Right.
And I don't think any of us expect that to happen. Guys that were at this past Saturday Night Live that are potentially making decisions this weekend. And two of them were not really sure if they were going to be on campus yet this weekend for official visits. One of them has arrived already, Jaleel Florence. Four-star cornerback, was committed to the Ducks, will make his college decision on CBS Sports Network Monday night. He's going to be giving a verbal commitment to either Oregon or USC. Four-star player, top 100 player in 24/7 Sports' rankings, the 11th best cornerback, teammates of Jaleel Tucker, both of them from Lincoln High School in San Diego. Tucker is here as well for an official visit. He signed with Oregon in the early signing period. I think, guys, of all the players, I mean, there are top 10 prospects in the 2023 class on campus this weekend. I think of all the players, regardless of class, I think this is probably just getting Florence here for his official visit a second time is probably the biggest development outside of him committing to Oregon this weekend, if that were to happen. Ahead of his Monday decision. I think this is a huge win. The crystal ball has never really shifted with USC, and getting him here literally 24 hours before he makes his decision by the time he leaves Eugene is a massive win for Dan Lanning.
You know what I remember is do you remember Oregon would have, you know, past years with USC, Oregon would be in a great spot going into the last weekend, and then USC would have like all of their – they have a similar weekend to what Oregon's doing, and it seems like Oregon's targets would always be a part of that, and then I wouldn't say always flip, but there were times where Oregon would lose out on players in part because of these kind of final weekend things in Los Angeles, and a lot of times it was in their backyard, and it would kind of maybe happen almost a little bit under the radar of maybe no one was really talking about it, and then it comes out on Monday, oh, this recruit was at USC for the weekend, and now USC's in a great spot. I think Oregon having Florence on their campus is huge for his last visit right before he signs or makes a decision on Monday, as Matt said. That's really big. This is, and we talked about this on previous shows, like to me, he's the most important target still on the board for Oregon. They need corners. he's, I think, not maybe not the highest rated or very, very close to the highest rated of anyone that's realistic that Oregon could land. I guess Josh Connerly is probably the other big name. But this is a guy you, I think you really need to land for a variety of reasons. A, he can help and maybe help right away at a position of need. B, it's a head-to-head rivalry recruiting moment against USC, who's already had kind of their fair moments, you know, of shine here recently, you know, about the transfer portal, the Travis Dye moment. You know, prior to that, they went and flipped a bunch of kids in 23 and several kids in 22 from Oklahoma. Like, Lincoln Riley has some momentum right now. And if you're Oregon, you really badly need to win this head-to-head. I'm not saying it's the end of the world if you don't, but to me, it would be significant if Florence ends up picking USC. That to me would kind of signal something, because Oregon has a lot of reasons to be in a good spot here. They can pitch playing time. They can pitch a defensive minded coaching staff, which Lincoln Riley is not what he is known for. You can pitch the continuity with, you know, a fellow signee in Jaleel Tucker, who's from all, you know, all intents and purposes, one of his closest friends. You've got a lot of things in your favor, and to have him here for the final weekend is huge. Closing on him feels like, honestly, a necessity for this staff. And if you do get his commitment and his signature, that's big. That's really big for this class and how it's going to play out. And I think we're all pretty optimistic about where things are. I think where he chose to kind of be this weekend is significant. But now we just play the waiting game, and we hope on Monday that maybe we're doing an emergency podcast. Right. Recording Monday evening, talking about the significance of this in the couple of days leading up to signing day. And if he does commit on Monday, that does add a little bit of nice momentum for Oregon going into the last 48 hours before signing starts.
Yeah, this is the most imperative member of this 2022 class, obviously. And I don't really think it's, I mean, like you said, Eric, I think we're all kind of optimistic about it. We will know officially until Monday. But I don't think it's really a coincidence that he's the last official visit that he's taking, and the last weekend you can take official visits is to Oregon. It just, in recruiting, I mean, sometimes it doesn't work out that way, but in most times in recruiting, if that's the case, then that's usually, you know, that's usually that way for a reason. But I think, yeah, Eric, you outlined the pitch of what Oregon would make to him. I think it's simple, really. It's just that you have the ability to have an abundance of playing time. You're a top 100 recruit. You're being led by a defensive-minded head coach. Just everything that you outlined is I don't know. It would be a tough thing for a lot of kids to turn down, honestly. I think a lot of recruits do sometimes make their college decisions on what school will offer them the most playing time. And rightfully so. People might think it's a selfish thing, but it's really just, you know, how can I get my name out there and how could I, you know, progress through the team and play the game that they love? And I think in this instance for Florence, there's such an open gap for this, like corners three through, I don't know, even like the top three corners. Because no one's really a, you know, lockdown guy yet. And I would be surprised if it were Florence who were the lockdown guy as a true freshman. But if he were to commit to Oregon, he would have basically all the opportunity in the world to showcase that he is or that he's not. Him and Jaleel Tucker, I think, as a combination or a pair, I should say, would be just massive as well for the defensive backfield. You could maybe slide Tucker at corner as well and give Oregon just some more depth there. You'd be relying on a lot of freshmen basically, you know, first-year students who to the game with somebody like Darren Barkins and Jalen Davies and Avante Dickerson. But that's a lot more depth than you had just, you know, a couple weeks ago. So I think it's clear that to Oregon, Florence is the number one target. You know, there's a reason that cornerbacks coach Demetrius Martin and defensive coordinator Tasha Lupoy showed up on his house at 12:01 on the first day that they could officially recruit for Oregon. That's not a coincidence. But I do like the recruiting battle side to it as well. USC seemingly has, you know, all the momentum in the Pac-12, which makes sense. They're landing potentially really talented players in the portal. Obviously, Travis Dye is a really talented player that they landed in the portal, but they are, you know, making moves. You know, Mario Williams, another wide receiver for Oklahoma, really talented player. they could use a player like Jaleel Florence, who's going to have 4 to 5 years of eligibility. He's a talented cornerback. They need help on defense. They need help in their cornerback room. And Dante Williams, we're all familiar with, is a hell of a recruiter. If he wants a player, he's going to do his damnedest to try to get him. And for Demetrius Martin, Dan Lanning, this defensive staff, if they were able to win against USC's defensive staff, that's great. That's a good sign for this year. It's a good sign for the future endeavors against potential recruiting battles with USC. But again, we won't know until Monday. But Eric, I did like that you mentioned the momentum it could bring Oregon in the final 48 hours. I think that'll be momentum for longer than 48 hours, just because of the implications of landing a top 100 recruit. Even though obviously he was committed to Oregon and has all this, you know, love towards Oregon, it's clearly. But landing a top 100 recruit, like basically before the buzzer, would be a lot of momentum going forward, especially with the class of 23. And especially on a day after the weekend where all these 2023 and 2024 kids are here to see what the staff could do. And then they see it in real life where someone does commit to them and does commit to this program and this new set of coaches.
The other player, Dave Aluli, out of Washington, Puyallup, 4-star offensive lineman, was committed to Mario Cristobal, but then backed off that commitment after he left for Miami. He was slated to be in Eugene this weekend for an official visit. As of Friday, 9:44 in the morning, it does not look like he will be here. I think that's probably a trend to Miami. That's where the crystal ball is already going. Steve Wiltfong, director of football recruiting, Brandon Huffman, national recruiting editor, have both thrown in some crystal balls while we were recording this podcast in real time. So it gives you some adjustments there. And it's Oregon's in a weird spot and with a couple guys. Grayson Halton, the 4-star defensive lineman, decommitted. And he will make his decision. He includes Oregon in the top three, but he was at Oklahoma last weekend. I think everyone thinks that's where he's going to land. And then Dave Aluli. Both players, I think Oregon would love to have, but both players are and they're the highest rated guys at the position that they have committed, offensive line and D line for each of them. But it's also a position where there's a lot of talent on the roster already, and with the numbers so crunched, they're in a weird spot where it's like we don't want to lose our best player at that position, but this maybe gives us more room to go after receiver, for instance, where they only have 7 scholarship players. So it's kind of a positive and a negative at the same time. You get to redistribute your depth somewhere else, but at the same time, you lose a 4-star that you maybe were trending for with both players. How do you guys look at Dave's decision and also Grayson's decision to decommit?
Yeah, I think those are two prospects that I was pretty high on. And I think, if you're being honest, I think most Oregon fans listening were as well. If you'd watched tape, if you kind of read up on them, I think it's kind of notable. Halton was kind of part of that San Diego trio along with the two Jaleels, and it kind of felt like that was a package deal. And I guess maybe if you want to be really, negative here, you could say, does that screw things up with Florence as well? And we don't think it does, but it's sort of a little bit strange. I will note that Greg Biggins did stop by Duck Territory and noted that sounded like Oregon maybe wasn't as aggressive in recruiting Halton down the stretch, which right. is kind of interesting. Maybe it's not maybe he doesn't fit some of the schematics. Maybe they like other prospects better. Maybe, as Matt was saying, they feel pretty darn good about where they're at with defensive line, just from a numbers perspective going forward. Maybe there's just a lot of confidence and there's not really a sense on the staff right now that that's a need to address. And they just felt like, hey, we'll let him go somewhere else. I'm still a little bit bummed because I was excited to see him play at Oregon. I thought he was going to be a heck of a player. Same thing with Dave Aluli. I think that's we've talked about this a little bit. That was the first 4-star recruit from the state of Washington Oregon had landed since I think Jonathan Stewart. So 17 years, which is crazy. And now it seems very unlikely he ends up at Oregon still. So that kind of drought with the state of Washington maybe continues, maybe it doesn't, maybe Connerly changes it, we'll see. But it certainly kind of interesting to kind of see how that's gone. I guess it does make sense that Mario Cristobal and Alex Mirabal being kind of the primaries and a big part of some of these offensive linemen's decisions to pick Oregon, them having some success makes some sense, considering the relationships that were already built. But I think both guys could have been good players at Oregon. Say, I'm not going to disparage either of them and say, oh, these, I'm not going to sour grapes this. I think it's kind of a bummer, but clearly there's a plan in place. And I will say, and we've talked about this, the positions that really needed to be addressed, I don't think the interior offensive line is really a position of huge need right now. And interior defensive line, I think maybe in a couple of years will be, which is where Holt maybe was going to be effective. But certainly in 22, we've talked about it. That's the strength of this defense is you've got Dorlis, Popo, and now Tamani. That's three of the best interior linemen in the conference last year that you now have in position. So it's not like missing out on Halton really hurts you in 22. But I think down the line in 24 is where maybe you'd be concerned. I'm sure the staff feels like we've got connections in 23 and 24 that are going to be just as good. So
yeah, I mean, this is a situation where you kind of have to trust the staff, at least with the Halton implications. I think they're both really talented players. I'm not surprised to see Dave Aiuoli follow Mario Cristobal and Alex Mirabal to Miami. It's just, it's kind of how it goes, especially when I kind of liken it to how a lot of Oklahoma players followed Lincoln Riley to USC. You know, that's like an offensive-minded guru in Lincoln Riley who knows how to get the ball to wide receivers, knows how to use a quarterback and a running back, all these things that – as to why Oklahoma's offensive players left when Brent Venables came in, because they didn't necessarily know who was going to be the offensive coordinator. They ended up getting that solved, but it's the same thing with Aiuoli and Mario. You know, Mario and Mirabal are two of the best in the game at developing offensive linemen. I don't think it'll surprise anybody to see or Miami have the same type of success in recruiting offensive linemen as they did at Oregon. That's just their bread and butter. It would make the most amount of sense. If you're an offensive lineman and you want to be developed by some of the best, you know, offensive line coaches in the country, Miami is now an option. It used to be Oregon and now it's Miami. So for Aiuoli, I don't blame that at all. I think he would have been just fine. Like Eric said, I think Oregon's interior offensive lineman position is pretty deep. Oregon also lost Logan Sagapulu to the transfer portal to Miami. So that's another name to cross off the list. But I think this is fine. I think moving forward, you trust the staff and Grayson Halton. He's a very good player. He's a four-star recruit for a reason. Oklahoma is, you know, also run by a defensive-minded head coach in Venables. And so they obviously clearly made a really big push. They got him to visit. You know, it would be hard for me to turn down somebody like Venables too, especially when they're putting the full court press as a defensive player and as a defensive lineman. And at Oklahoma, where playing time on the defensive line is probably better for me than it would be at Oregon, as Eric lined out with Popo, Brandon Dorlis, and Taimani. You know, it's going to be hard. It's a hard rotation to crack, and those are just the top three. There's still some more depth. They've already have two interior defensive linemen in this class. Halton has, to me, had a Brandon Dorlis type body where he would probably be more effective on the inside, but you could potentially move him to the edge. But, you know, this is how recruiting works. It's just how it happens. It would be very nice if Oregon were to sign both of them. That's just not the case. I don't feel like the class is going to be in peril because of it. It's already, quote unquote, in peril because of the whole coaching change and falling with so many recruits. But there's nothing you could do about that. Again, what Lanning and his staff have been able to do in the short period of time that have been able to recruit is pretty great. It's significant. It's encouraging. It's not going to be as flashy, or the recruits won't be as flashy as everybody would hope them to be. But with such limited options, the staff is putting in overtime and trying to figure out who's who's going to be the best types of players for them. And it may or may not be one or two of these players that we're talking about, and Ayuli and Holland, or it might be none of them. So you just, at this point, it's all about being patient and looking forward to 2023, because then the full staff will have all the time in the world in the summer and during the football season to host players and really establish their names on the field as well. In 22, just looking to round it out strong with hopefully, you know, a commitment from either Jordan James or Julio Florence.
Now, the players that are going to be on campus this weekend unofficially, or I guess we should talk about the other guy that's officially here. That's Arlis Boardingham, a three-star athlete out of Southern California. He was here for a visit. He was at Florida last weekend, or 2 weekends ago, excuse me. He's supposed to be here last weekend. That ended up getting pushed back to this weekend. He's starting to trend to Florida, and this, we'll see what happens here with Boardingham. He's supposed to be here Friday afternoon, Friday evening. Honestly, to be honest with you, it wouldn't surprise me if that visit just doesn't happen. Just a feel of where things are at. Also on campus, Amarion Winston, younger brother of former Oregon Duck Lamar Winston. He will be here for an official visit. He was a former verbal commitment as well, and he's a four-star in 24/7 Sports' rankings, edge player. I think he's probably one that could maybe give a verbal commitment this weekend. It's probably important to get him in the fold. It's an in-state guy. He was at Washington, I believe, last weekend, went to Florida 2 weeks ago. Florida, it's really weird. They're recruiting West Coast kids. They took a Northwest kid to his verbal commitment. You don't see Florida out here all that often, and they're like going after five or six guys. Weird deal. 2023, though, there's some big names. Five-star quarterback Dante Moore from Detroit. He is on campus. And then top five and five-star quarterback Nicholas Ilamaleve. Is that how you say it, Eric? You're better at this than I am.
I'm not even going to try. Nico I. Let's go
Nico
with
Nico I.
And maybe we can get some pronunciation. That one's one of the harder ones.
Nice. I tried finding something. Couldn't get it. I didn't hear from anybody, and I apologize.
Ilamaleve? I don't know. Sure. That's a tough one.
He's
man.
From California. He's a top five player in the country, regardless of position. He has already tweeted that he is in Eugene. He's bringing some of his friends that are high school recruits as well, including Jordan Anderson, a 2024 prospect who has multiple Power Five offers already. Guys, just the last couple of weekends, the quarterbacks that have run through, and now we have these two here. It feels like Oregon's trying to position themselves where maybe by end of March, April, yeah, May, they've got one of these guys committed and locked in. And we all know when you get a quarterback committed early, your recruiting class can fall into place in an impressive fashion pretty quickly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, think about the 2021 class, Ty Thompson committing, I think, in around March, right after I think he was one of the few visitors who made it out here right before the COVID-19 shutdown first started. That was instrumental in building that class. You think about the receivers they were able to land in that class, the tight ends, you know, the running backs, the skill players they were able to land, the offensive linemen in that class. I mean, that was offensively, I think that is pretty clearly pound for pound the best class in program history from just a pure recruiting basis. We'll, of course, be able to assess on-field play down the line, but boy, they really landed some big guys. And I think a big part of that was they got Ty Thompson in the fold really early. And Ty was one of the alpha dogs out west. And if you're another alpha dog in another position, you know, you've got him to be your quarterback going forward. That's huge. So absolutely, I think getting one of these guys lined up maybe around the spring game, somewhere around that time, it's a commit, maybe a little before, I think that would be huge. I did really want to really quickly want to go back to Boardingham, who, just because I'm we talk a lot in this podcast about wide receiver being a need for 2022. It feels like Justice Lowe is going to be the only wide receiver signing in this class from a prep perspective. There's obviously a lot of guys in the portal. We've talked about some of them. just think that's kind of notable to kind of monitor. Boardingham also, it sounds like, being recruited more for tight end as opposed to receiver, based upon what Greg Biggins shared on the message board. So that maybe they just didn't see him as a fit at receiver anyway. So there wasn't as much urgency. It's just kind of a little bit perplexing. I thought they might be able to kind of get involved and add maybe two or three total wide receivers in the 2022 prep signing class, as opposed to just Lowe. And I do really like Lowe's tape. We talked about him a lot, but numbers wise, they still have some heavy lifting to do at that spot. So I wanted to make that point, but yeah, back to the 23 class, getting a quarterback is imperative. And I think there's a lot of names out West. And if you can just honestly pick your poison, you know, there's about four or five guys where if you land any of them, it's really significant for the future of the program and for the 23 class. And having Jared, was it Amalave? Having Nico Amalave on campus, and if you, I mean, that's to me, I mean, because obviously we know, you know, there have been some other commits, but to me, of the ones available, like, he might be the one to really keep an eye on. I think he's really, really talented. And I also, it seems like there's some pretty strong mutual interest. So this is a big one.
Yeah, obviously needing a quarterback, you know, that usually helps in a recruiting class from time to time. This is three straight top 50 players in the country who are all quarterbacks, three of the top five who have visited Oregon the last two weekends. Two of which are from California, and Jaden Rashada for Pittsburgh and Amalave from Downey in California. This seems like players where you really just kind of can't miss here for Oregon. You got to land one of these guys.
Yes.
I think Dante Moore is going to be a little more difficult just because he's a Michigan kid. The fact that he's coming out this early for Oregon is already a good sign, I'd say. It's clearly never a bad thing if you're getting a five-star kid, a top 10 player in the country to come visit you. You'll take that all day. But really, you know, Rashada and Amalave, those two should be your priorities one and two. And, you know, in what order that is for Oregon, we may not know. Oregon has to land one of these players, especially coming off of a 2022 class, which is really just, you know, not what they anticipated. I wouldn't say a letdown just because of all the circumstances that go on behind it, but it's going to cap off your 2023 really, really early and in a good way. You know, we talked about how Ty Thompson was somebody who committed in that March area before the season, so they don't have to worry about it. That seems to be the trend with high caliber quarterbacks. They figure out what school they want to go to early before the season and just focus on their game. I think Jaden Rashada had an interview. I don't remember who it was with at 24/7, but he said that he'd like, you know, that he's planning on committing in like that May area before the season even comes close to starting. So this is the time, if there is any, to establish yourself as Oregon, you know, as Kenny Dillingham, and show what this team can provide in the future, show what the plans are in the future, how he'll be used as a quarterback. And it would be, you know, good timing because Bo Nix is gone after the year. He has 2 years of eligibility, but he's been on the record saying that he only wants to do a one-and-done type of deal. And Ty Thompson is, you know, somebody who could step up or could not, and where it'll be another QB competition if they bring in somebody like Dante Moore, Amalave, and Rashada. You know, those are all really, really talented players. Eric, I like your point of bringing up the wide receiver conundrum. It is still a conundrum. Justice Lowe was listed as an athlete on 24/7. It seems like Oregon's going to be using him as a wide receiver. That'd be nice. Really only like 6-7 dudes on roster who are scholarship wideouts. Not really sure what they're doing there, but we'll see. I don't know. Maybe Jaleel Tucker is somebody they look at as a wide receiver. Maybe we go back to Matt's idea that he's vocalized in this podcast many times of putting Brian Addison back at wide receiver. I think they have options. It just seems like that is the position where they haven't thought or really made it a point of emphasis to go after yet. Getting Boardingham would be nice, but yeah, like Greg Biggin said, more of a tight end. You look at his frame and then you say, yeah, I understand as to why that they're going after a tight end. He'd be great as like a massive wide receiver like Juwan Johnson, but I think he is better suited to a tight end role. Who knows? I do think that they need to get, like we've been saying a long time, like two or three more wide receivers, just guys who are capable of playing that position with some depth. Some experience would be nice. A Chase Cotto, somebody like that, just getting them into the fold. And because all it takes is, you know, one really terrible game and you got two guys with injuries and you're suddenly really, really thin at wide receiver.
We should know other unofficial visitors in this class from a lower level. State of Arizona is going to be well represented once again. Cole Martin, a 2023 four-star cornerback who's committed to Oregon. His dad is Demetrius Martin, Oregon's new cornerbacks coach. Martin is committed. He's here. Kyle Casper, a four-star receiver. Jackson Bowers, a four-star tight end. Both in the 2023 class, they are here for unofficial visits. Miles Lockhart, a four-star out of athlete out of the state of Arizona in 2024. He is here for a visit. We know Jaden Lamar. He is during this video, this podcast has tweeted out a four-star running back from Washington in 2023. He is here for an unofficial visit. It's looking like Oregon has loaded up the class, the visit weekend once again. And we said it on a couple podcasts, and I think we're going to say it for a while. Impressive job by this staff to quickly move and get these top players here. And look, this is what was expected of them, right? Like, mm-hmm. I think, Eric, you've talked multiple times just about the recruiting success and the history that these guys have as assistant coaches from wherever they came from. Didn't really matter where their stops were. They were elite recruiters, and the expectation was we would see that play out here. And yeah, there hasn't been a ton of verbal commitments, and I'm not trying to say that as a negative, but what we've seen early on, this getting talent to Eugene will not be a problem.
Yeah, no, and I think that was always the expectation. And I harking back to a point I made earlier, Jared, you did a good job of communicating it. This is where like the head-to-head battle with USC is important, because it's not just 22, it's 23. Like I think what we're going to start seeing here over the next – I don't think – I'm fully expecting we're going to start seeing a lot of head-to-head Oregon-USC battles. And this is no different in 23 and 24. And you've got to establish these relationships, because USC is going to be alive again in Southern California. And they're going to be very, very involved. And for Oregon to continue – Oregon had a ton of success while USC was down in Southern California. 2019, 2020, 21, pulling top targets from that Los Angeles area. Think of the Justin Flo's and Kayvon Thibodeau's, the five stars, the alphas that Oregon historically had never had any success pulling. And I'm not going to diminish the accomplishment. Some part of that is USC being what it was, and they're alive again. And Oregon is going to have to a big part of it. A big part of it. But I mean, Oregon. I'm trying to give credit to the previous staff, because there's been a lot
of. Of course.
For the previous staff was blah, 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 blah. So trying to give credit. But my point is just like, I think we're going to see like a full on, head to head for a lot of recruits. And a lot of them are going to be recruited out of USC's backyard. And we're talking about some of the names we're talking about today are kids from Southern California who are primary targets out west. And it's going to be Oregon, USC probably coming down to the wire. And then, of course, the Southern East, you know, you have to consider the SEC, the Big Ten, the ACC. But for kids that end up out west, it's going to be a lot of these battles. And for Oregon to make inroads really early is imperative. If you're going to win these battles, you have to develop these relationships now to have any chance, because USC is going to be able to pull those kids in for unofficial visits whenever they want to. A much higher basis. It's a lot easier to get a kid to drive. I know LA traffic's a pain in the butt, but it's a lot easier to get a kid to drive, you know, 30 to 40 minutes to get to USC than it is to hop on a flight. Probably, you know, probably not necessarily a direct flight either, mind you, from Los Angeles to Eugene, because flying to Eugene can be kind of a pain. it's a lot easier to do that. And so Oregon has to maximize his opportunities, and having Southern California kids up here, having kids, we mentioned Jaden Lamar, some kids from the Northwest as well. It's really imperative to get this done early. And I think, again, 23, we haven't seen necessarily the fall through with verbal commitments. I think the next few months is going to be really telling in terms of kind of how these recruiting battles jockey back and forth.
Yeah. Again, this staff is going to be competitive no matter where they go. It'll be a lot of fun to see the recruiting battles that pop up state to state. Oregon seems to have some kind of a stranglehold on the state of Arizona the last couple of years. It seems like a lot of the high-end talent that state develops is going to Oregon. There's been a couple of like really highly rated players out of Arizona that have gone to either Ohio State or Georgia or something like that. But that's still a state that they need to have a lot of success in. You have Jordan Somerville and Kenny Dillingham have those Arizona connections. Lanning was the GA at Arizona State, but still, that's a significant state. But yeah, the Battle of Southern California is really important for the staff. They seem to be making the rounds down there already. I still feel like while USC is certainly hot, there's still a lot of uncertainty around the program, but I do feel like that's going to be just a thorn in Oregon's side for the next couple of years if Lincoln Riley performs as he should with all of the talent that they have accumulated over the past couple of years. I feel a lot more confident that Lincoln Riley is going to perform than I do Clay Helton. That's the thing. So you can't just rely on USC to have, they have this talented roster, but there's no way they win more than 7 games this year. In a few years when Lincoln Riley has his fingerprints all over the program, they could be a serious contender. They could be back to being USC, which is good for the conference, which is good for competition with Oregon. But in terms of recruiting, that's going to be a dilemma because it was a long time ago, but in the Pete Carroll days, nobody thought to go into Southern California and try to take a recruit. It just didn't happen. No, it's basically a wall at the edge of California. It's like nobody's coming in because you're not getting anybody. So Oregon needs to continue to get people from that area. I think a lot of Oregon's ability to get highly talented players from Southern California, along with Clemson, along with Ohio State, along with anybody who decided to come in there, was because of USC's incompetence the last couple of years. They might not be incompetent anymore. They've already made a pretty damn smart move in hiring away Lincoln Riley. So it'll be really interesting to see how Southern California recruiting turns up. But Oregon is still putting their foot down in there. They're still going hard after San Diego players. They're still going hard after Los Angeles metro area kids. Like Eric's talking about, these quarterbacks the last couple of weeks have all been from California except for Dante Moore, who's from Michigan. But the Southeastern ties, I feel like, will come into fruition eventually. Jordan James, running back, who's out of Tennessee, current Bulldog commit, but is here. Was here last weekend at Oregon. A lot of strong ties there. I think those will all come together at one point. But obviously establishing the state of Oregon is first. I don't know about you guys, but I don't feel like that's going to be an issue. And I feel like Oregon can capitalize on Oregon State. Washington would be interesting. I don't think anybody has complete control of Washington. It should be the Huskies. It is clearly not any kind school in the last couple of years.
Ohio State, if it's anybody, Jared, it's been the Buckeyes.
Yeah, it has been. They've gotten anybody they've wanted to, really, unless it's a UW legacy, because then that's the only way that Washington has landed a recruit in there. But like Eric was talking about earlier, Oregon hasn't landed a 4-star from Washington in forever, seemingly. I think that'll be a priority, but Southern California produces the most talent. And then I think it's Arizona. And I think those are the two places that you must go after. Every once in a while, as a Northern California kid who's quite good, try to go after him. Obviously, have to deal with Stanford and Cal, but I think that's not as big of a matchup as it is between USC. I might mention UCLA, but really, it's just USC in terms of recruiting battles for Oregon.
From the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, April 26th on Paramount Plus.
Yes!
On May 23rd.
I want to go back to normal.
What's normal?
The Paramount Plus original series, Evil Returns.
We've already hunted werewolves and demons.
And now what? A baby antichrist?
Okie dokie.
Prepare yourself.
You will not beat us.
For the end.
I have visions of hell.
Make it stop. Make it shut up.
You're not gonna survive this.
Evil, the final season. Streaming May 23rd, only on Paramount Plus.
Let's transition now to just kind of projecting this class out. There's about six spots right now that Oregon has available for scholarships in 2022 season. Oregon could choose to sign four guys on February 2nd and hold two scholarships for transfers down the road that play out. We also know five-star Josh Connerly Jr. He is going to be making his decision in March, so you probably want to hold a spot available for him. It's going to be interesting. I think what Oregon does from a results standpoint on Wednesday will give us a clear indicator of maybe where they feel like they stand with Connerly as well as transfer portal targets. And look, this number could grow. You know, there's certainly a couple guys within the program right now that, you know, we're not going to out them, but it wouldn't surprise any of us if they ended up transferring, whether that was in a week, a month, leading up to spring football, after spring football. All that matters is they have to get down to 85 total scholarships for fall camp, which would be in August. And that'll dictate a lot of what happens with who they add here. If they go over six, we know that the staff is expecting players to transfer out. Let's look at some guys. We posted a story on duckterritory.com of who we project Oregon to land. I think Florence is one that we expect, and Jordan James is another one that we expect. Kamari Terrell is another one that we expect. Three guys right there, all four stars. And I think if you add those three, it's probably looked at as a very successful national signing day for Dan Lanning. You flip Jordan James from Georgia. You land a prospect in Texas and Kamari Terrell, who a lot of SEC programs had pursued. And then you were able to keep Jaleel Florence from going to your biggest competitor in the conference, USC. And I think all three of those address kind of the needs, right, of Oregon, some of the, not all, but some of the needs that Oregon has in 2022.
That was where I was going to start, Matt. Position of need, position of need, position of need. You need corners and you need receivers. Or sorry, running back. So you still need receivers, but running back.
Still need receivers.
Yes.
The
Jordan James thing, I don't want to overlook it. He could play pretty significant snaps, like, immediately. We talked about the running back shakeout. We don't need to go through all of that again. But, like, I mean, there's opportunity there. I mean, Cardwell and McGee or Dollars is kind of what you've got right now. And there's other targets in the portal. We've talked about Derek Brassard before. But James, they needed a running back here, like, just point blank. And they needed a prep running back. And this is one that is obviously pretty well sought after. Notable that Coach Lachlan, also from Tennessee, that's where James is from. Kind of wonder what kind of relationship those two have developed. That'll be something that'll be interesting maybe to flesh out over the next couple of weeks. But getting a running back of this caliber from any part of the country is significant, much less somebody from the Southeast who was committed to a team that just won a national championship. And I think pretty clearly there was maybe something going on with Georgia and him in terms of he might not have had too many choices to stick with them. But at the same time, like, this is a big time recruit. And I think somebody who could, like, legitimately play right away, which is also how I feel about the two corners we talked about. We talked a lot about Florence, but I don't know how much Terrell would play day one, but he would be in the discussion. He's in the mix. I mean, again, there's three corners that are going to be on the roster who really have any meaningful game experience. And only one of them has any starting experience. And that starting experience wasn't at Oregon. That's Christian Gonzalez from Colorado. So addressing corner was a huge priority for this staff. And if you can say you finished by signing 3 4-star corners out of, you know, 2 out of the West Coast, 1 out of Texas, that would be a pretty darn big win in terms of addressing that for both the short term and the long term. And the same thing about running back. You know, I think if that's all that ends up happening on Wednesday, if that's all it is, those three, like, I hope it's understood by the fan base how significant it is to be able to secure these three. I think this would be a pretty big win. I know everybody would love to see Connerly's going to have to wait for that, but you'd love to see Josh Connerly just because it's a 5-star and he's from Washington and it's an offensive lineman and everybody wants him. It would be point to, you know, Adrian Clem's development and it would point to the staff and all that. But, you know, that's a little bit down the line. People, Kristen Miller is a name people have been talking about. Andrew Paul is a name people have been talking about. These are big names. Doesn't really seem likely that Oregon, those guys might both might end up at Georgia. But needless to say, like, those three in and of itself, I think would be pretty significant. And I still think you have room, obviously, in the portal to address other needs. And shoot, maybe there's a player who decides not to sign right away, like Connerly, that pops up on the radar that plays receiver. I mean, yeah, just that. I don't know of a player. I'm just saying, hypothetically, who knows who's out there, you know, in about 10 days when a lot of these players have signed and maybe you can get in on somebody late. I don't know. But I still, I know, I hate to keep bringing it up, but the receiver spot, I'm just still a little perplexed with the plan is. This is the only position group right now that I'm a little bit like, okay, what? They might be a little shallow there because I think you've addressed all the other needs, assuming you land the players we've talked about.
Yeah, assuming you land the players we discussed and Terrell and Florence and Jordan James, definitely hit where you need to. We've talked about on this podcast multiple times before, but the ideal scenario for running back was a prep and a transfer. I feel pretty optimistic that Jarek Broussard commits to the Ducks as well as a transfer running back from Colorado. Just provides a lot of depth. He's a talented individual. Could certainly be a contributing member for Oregon's team next year. Florence, we talked about. Kamari Terrell is a very intriguing prospect, low 4-star, but somebody who possesses otherworldly speed. He runs a 10.72 100-meter dash. So he's somebody that you just kind of get on the field and see what he can do and teach him his, you know, teach him techniques later on, because his speed is ridiculous. He's just a player that was highly sought after out of Texas. He's a cornerback, 6'1", 180, according to his 24/7 sports profile. It's good size. It's just good size for a cornerback. It's exactly what you want. So he's another guy that you add into the fold for this freshman class who could compete for, you know, playing time at corner basically immediately. The scholarship limit and the scholarship chart is still a little, you know, unknown right now, and considering players who could transfer, who could be out of here by spring ball, whatever the case may be, is, you know, you'd like to save at least a couple spots if you can. For somebody like Connerly, somebody in the portal, a wide receiver, like Eric mentioned, maybe somebody just doesn't sign the second time around, like Connerly. I think it's, you know, it's always in this day and age of college football, I think it's always really nice to have a spot or two available just on a whim, just on a random transfer. I'm not sure what Oregon's going to do with that, considering that they need to accumulate talent, not immediately, but basically immediately, because of the departures that they've had in their recruiting class. And we don't know who's going to transfer out. I can all but guarantee you people will, just because that's how college football is. I'll be interested to see how many spots they'll have available left, or how many people that they do take, how many people they anticipate leaving the program pretty soon.
We should also the Jarek Broussard one is a good one, and I think you have to leave spots for Christian Miller. You have to leave a spot for Josh Connerly Jr. If both of those guys want to come to Oregon. I think Connerly Jr. is probably the more realistic one happening with Christian, outside of Christian Miller. I don't know. I don't know what it is. There's nothing really trending right now for Oregon with Miller. He loved his visit. His mom loved the visit. It's just a long ways away. He's from Georgia. Everything kind of points to Miller landing with the Bulldogs. But maybe, look, maybe Oregon gets a surprise on signing day. And, you know, that would be one in which it would be a surprise. I think, though, when you look at the guys that we've mentioned, let's throw in Omarion Winston into the fold as well. We've projected him as a commit as well. I think the remaining two to three, maybe four spots are probably going to be filled via transfer portal. And probably I think it would make sense, and maybe if you guys would agree or disagree with this, I think it would make sense to try and find transfer portal guys that are 1 year, what we know in basketball terms as grad transfers, players with 1 year of eligibility. Get them into the system, help you in 2022, and you flip that player again in the 2023 class. So you kind of get the best of both worlds. You get someone who can help this season, but you also don't take up a spot long-term from a roster standpoint.
I think that's where the Chase Cota name was attractive. Position of need at receiver. What Matt said is true there. 1 year, I hate to use the term rental because that seems kind of productive, but kind of what it is. You get a guy for a year, you bring him in, and you maximize that time. I think at receiver in particular, I would even be open to a 2 or 3 year transfer at receiver just because the depth down the line isn't, I mean, because you're only taking one in this class, it seems like, and they've already seen a lot of players leave. I know there's a lot of underclassmen, so I just think it would be nice to have another guy who you could count on for 2 to 3 years. But I agree in general. I mean, I think the thing that you have to recognize here is for Dan Lanning to kind of get the system in place and build the team he wants, like, he needs to get his players here. And I'm not saying players of the portal aren't his players, but ultimately the more players he has to work with in the 23 cycle, you know, you'd love that class to be, because 22 is going to be a small class. Like, what are we projecting? 15, 16 preps, maybe something like that. 17, possibly.
Yeah.
Stretch. Like, I'd love to see 23 be a class where you go maybe 25 and beyond, if you can. Mm-hmm. I don't want to put you in a numbers crunch. I don't have the numbers in front of me now for what that would require, but if you can get a somewhat big class in 23, I think that would be a deal. And that's where Matt talking about kind of 1 year rentals makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. You know, I won't belabor the point anymore, but, you know, wide receivers is a huge issue. Just getting the 1 year, the grad transfers, somebody like Chase Cota would really help Oregon. They just need somebody who has depth and experience in playing the position, gives them the ability to, gives them the ability to take one or two people and then, you know, have that scholarship for next year like Eric outlined. It's, you know, it's pretty simple at that point.
I think that's going to do it for us here on the podcast. Approaching 60 minutes, we're going to make sure we stay under that 60-minute timeline. Plenty of coverage on DuckTerritory.com this weekend for recruiting. Stick with us throughout the week next week as we get to signing day. Make sure to take advantage of that signing day promo, 60% off right now, an annual membership. Could get you all the way through football season, all the way through next year's recruiting period as well. If you sign up right now and save 60% off, huge opportunity for you as a non-subscriber to save some chunk of change and get on the site. Until we talk to you on Monday or maybe an emergency podcast this weekend, you've been listening to the Odds and Audibles podcast.
Talk to you later, folks.
Peace.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.